All right, so we went to go and see a movie. I'm going to say right up front, I was not comfortable with the gore.
Why?
My precious, tender little angel of a child, I felt the need to cover your eyes as I faint, but I fainted first. I can't believe what is available for kids to see. Like, there was like
that was
decapitations. 14. No, that's, I don't know. I think it's a little young.
I don't think so.
No?
I think throughout history, kids saw a whole lot of stuff. And I think seeing some special effects on a movie is not that serious.
I felt uncomfortable.
Okay.
I just wanted to mention that.
16 in like 8 days.
Oh, she is 16 in 8 days.
9 days.
Sweet 16. Such tenderness. No, it's just, it's a reflex. It's a reflex.
I remember when we were watching a movie a little while back, you full on reached over and put your hand over
I did.
Me.
I did. Now, okay.
Like 2 weeks ago.
So the way I feel about gore is the way you feel about any kissy stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, would you rather see beheading or kissing?
Beheading.
There we go. That's excellent. That's entirely...
Like slow, bloody beheading, too. Right. They like each saw.
How about glances of affection or full body explosions?
Dismemberment, limb by limb.
There we go. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was... I thought it was... I mean, I knew it was going to be a little gory, but that was something else. All right. So, overall thoughts, because we saw the first and sort of compared to the first, what were your thoughts?
I really liked the first.
Yeah.
The only thing I didn't personally, this is like a personal preference, not the movie, it's bad. The only thing I didn't like was it seemed like there wasn't quite enough humor in the first one. Obviously, I know that's not the kind of movie they were going for, but right. When it's that like depressing the entire time, it feels like it's just like a wall instead of like up and down. But that is not, like, a bad thing about the movie. That's my own personal preference. I know some people really like it because it's not super humoring the way a real situation like that would be.
I think was the only joke when they made the baboon noises, right?
I'm talking about the first one.
Oh, the first one. Yeah, I don't think there was any humor in the first one that I can recall.
That's the only thing I would have changed about the first one, but I thought the first one was really good. Second one, I watched it with my mom, and then a few days later I watched it with you. But the first time I watched it, it seemed really disjointed.
You mean because people's joints were getting dislocated? All is that what you, sorry, something else?
Something else.
Okay, got
something
it.
More abstract, philosophical.
Oh, it hurts.
I'm kidding. But it felt really like it didn't have a good sequencing. So it would just kind of jump from this to that to this to that.
Yeah.
Like, obviously spoilers, but at the end when, I don't even remember, Priscilla or something, the mom's name, when she dies, it just kind of happened. Like, obviously, yeah. It was foreshadowed for a chunk of the movie, and I realized that more on the second one. But on the first one, on the first watch through, it just seemed like it just, like, popped up.
Well, did you see the massive, deep symbolism of his wife and his mother dying exactly the same way, arrow through the heart? It's like Cupid's arrow, but...
I didn't notice that.
It's like Cupid's arrow, you know, through the heart, but with more of a force and more of going through the entire body.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, yeah.
Okay, and you were saying too, so in the first movie, the wife was established a little bit more.
Oh yeah, this is one that didn't make sense in the second.
Yeah,
go ahead. Why was the wife even out there fighting? She was the only woman on the entire battlefield. Like, I've watched it twice, and maybe I missed it both times, but
well,
I
they
do
just
not
wanted,
understand.
I think that the criticism that they're... See, a lot of art these days is not about truth. It's about avoiding lunatics.
Criticism.
Like, avoiding criticisms from
okay,
mentally
but what
ill people.
Feminists are going to go watch Gladiator.
Well, feminists who want to pick apart toxic masculinity.
I guess, yeah.
So they had to say, oh, she's empowered and blah, 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 right? And so they decided to have her go fight. As opposed to in the first movie, she was just, oh, helpless, all that kind of stuff, right? So she...
Like, yeah, in some aspects, it seemed like it was a bit too much copy-paste from the first.
I felt a real deja vu, and maybe it was because we saw the first a couple of days before the second, but it was like, guy loses wife in terrible battle, becomes a slave, fights his way up, attacks emperor, and it's just like, yeah, we just... I mean, I get that you want to repeat a formula for success, but not copy-paste.
Yeah, I like when movies that make sequels, when it's something like this and not one with like a major plot, because movies with like major plots, the main character can't die in the first movie, right?
Yeah.
So when I say movies like that are kind of going to have a sequel like this, like as an example with The Hunger Games,
yeah.
It had a sequel like the first.
Yeah.
And then it went places where it shouldn't have, in my opinion.
Right.
But With this one, I think doing a similar, like, you're a gladiator fighting for your freedom would definitely work, because that is the premise of the whole movie. And that's why people watch it. Like, there's so many movies about Rome.
Right.
People like this one because of the story type.
Right.
But I would have had some of the major aspects be different. Maybe some stuff to do with the emperors. I personally think the politics in this second, the sequel, was lacking like crazy. There were like such little lead up to it. There was so little political drama. And a big thing about the first one was the political drama. So I think that's something that really missed with this.
Well, I wonder, you know, it's like 30 years or 25 years since the first one, and people just are less smart. And so maybe they just, well, it's too complicated and so on, right? And
yeah.
So they had to kind of dumb it down a little.
A lot.
So let's talk Denzel.
Oh my God.
So you were not a massive fan of his role
acting.
Yeah, go on. He had this pimp walk, you know, like he's kind of slow rolling into the scene, like he's about to drop some dime bags on people's laps and ask for money or threaten someone with curbing.
See, I can see that a little bit, but you'd also have to develop the character like that for the rest of his...
For him to be like a gangster rather than his how he becomes emperor. Yeah, anyway.
Like, he's like, I genuinely think that was the worst acting I've ever seen that wasn't like a side character with one line.
Right. Well, he's been hugely praised. I've read some reviews. I just didn't think he was right for it.
Could not watch that. Anytime he went on screen, I was genuinely like cringing at it, because look, I'm not a great actor, but I can act better than that. And for someone with like no training, who's never been in a movie before.
Okay, tell me the things that bothered you the most about
this. He didn't understand when his sentence finished. So it would be like, what was that one at the end when he was telling them to kill the queen? Or the princess, I don't even know.
Yeah.
But he was like, that scene where he goes, politics.
Yeah.
End, I thought that was funny, but make that a character trait.
The hissing, and it overemphasizes things. Yeah,
you don't just throw that in once the entire movie.
Right.
Like, make that a character trait if that's what you're going to do. But he was saying something about the politics, and then he goes, and that is politics, my brother, or something like that.
Yeah.
And that, my brother, is politics. But he didn't finish his sentence beforehand.
Right.
So as an example, I'm going to be talking about the weather. And I'll be like, it's a mighty fine weather today, huh? That's politics, right? Like, that's an example.
It just
like,
bled into each other,
they
right?
It just blended.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like, there is a period there. There is punctuation. When you read your lines, you're supposed to follow that at least a little bit. So, obviously, I'm not just hating on him because of one line. I think it was at least 80 to 90% of everything he said and did was like, what are you doing?
Well, and so there's an acting choice or an art choice that people make. It's just like the blend of opposites. So when, oh, and can I tell you, the guys with thin hair are always what? Weak, you know, foolish, foppish. And it's like, that's not a thing. You know, thick hair often, I mean, I've talked to enough guys who are like man boys into their 50s, and it's because they got thick hair. So they don't really grow up as much. They don't mature as much. And so, but yeah, it's like the moment you see a character with thin hair, you know, he's going to have, you know, man boobs and character flaws of weakness. And I don't know. It's just that just kind of bothered me as a bald guy. But anyway, oh, except bald guys can be tough. So when the Denzel Washington character is taking the home off the senator because he won all of these bets, and he's like taking his home, but kissing him repeatedly on the cheeks.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's so deep, man. Like, he's taking his home and being affectionate. That's really complex. And it's like, that just seems kind of contradictory. It just, like, he didn't do that with anyone else. And so the idea that he shows a lot of affection when he's taken a guy's house, it just seemed like a really random, nonsensical directing choice.
Actually, I'm going to argue with you on that one. I think it was good because I think they were trying to show that he's the kind of character who manipulates a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they could have shown that in more ways than just that scene, because his manipulation only really showed up at the very end when he was telling the gay twin to kill the tall twin.
Right.
Emperor. So I think that actually worked with the character being super sweet and kind, and then being like, pack, which he could have said, oh, you could have said that so much better.
Oh, so he tells the guy, time to pack now, or what was the line?
He says, pack now, where he's like, pack, quickly.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you saying it like that?
Right. So I'll tell you, I'll disagree with you. And I would say, I agree with that. So you want someone to be manipulative. But when people have already won, they don't manipulate anymore.
I think because he wanted more information out of him. Because he says nothing goes through Rome without going through your ear.
Right.
So he still wants to put in good signs. So he needs information. So
you make,
yes, he'll win the house, but he needs to know more. So he's going to stay in good terms.
You make a good point. So I'll have to...
But that's because it's a very feminine standpoint.
Oh, interesting.
Even if you don't like someone, keep them in good terms for like gossip and information. And both of those guys seemed extremely feminine, which is why I think I got it that way.
Right, but. Yeah, I think that's right. And so I thought I was not a big fan. I've seen Denzel Washington, who I normally quite like. He's in a bunch of movies and I don't like these actors who have these verbal tics, like the sudden barking laugh and the cold stare and the sort of, I don't know, pimpy way of walking.
Yeah, it's like change it for your character. If you're really an actor, you shouldn't be playing yourself in every single role you get.
Well, especially when it's thousands of years ago in another continent, you know, then you can't bring your tics as an actor to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bothered me. And I found it kind of distracting that he was just out of place.
That one scene he had when he was walking around with, I swear to God, her name's Priscilla, with the woman. We call her the mother.
The mom, yeah.
When he was walking around with the mom in her house, that was genuinely, I think, the one that made me like, what are you, like, why are you here?
It
was really, really bad. And I'm usually not one to hugely criticize actors because I'm like, look, everyone's got a style. And obviously I blame the director for a lot of stuff that happens.
Yeah.
Not in this. This was not the director. This was a crappy actor.
Well, the director might have been yelling at him to please stop being like a guy in 1970s New York and be a guy in Rome.
Yeah, I highly, highly doubt the director was supporting this.
Yeah.
And honestly, my biggest problem is with the casting.
Right.
Why? Why would you pick him?
Well, and I think you and I also had some different opinions on the main guy.
Yeah, he was a little bit.
He was a bit flat for me.
Yeah, he's a bit
dead-eyed. And
no one's going to beat that first guy, though.
Yeah, Russell Crowe was great.
He was the best. Like,
he was fantastic. And he's got a wide range as an actor. So what I didn't like about the guy, he had these sort of spaced out, dreamy eyes, and he did not seem overly full of rage, but he kept being described as a guy as full of volcanic, like rage is raiding off you like sunlight.
At the beginning, I thought that was going to be one of his defining character traits because as Denzel Washington said badly, rage. I pick my gladiators for rage and
So rage rage is something you can't control, like the barbarian rage in D&D. So you can't control it, and this guy was supremely self-controlled. He's like, well, we're going to wait until they're close enough to fight them, and everybody hold together, and here's our strategy.
I think it would have been really interesting if the retired gladiator, the doctor, had to give him strategies.
To overcome his rage.
Yeah, I thought like if at the beginning, maybe he almost got killed in the first couple fights.
Yeah.
But he killed other people like crazy because he was so mad. But then he also, like, I want to say lost a lot of health because I'm using D&D terms, but not like he got injured a lot, right?
Yeah.
But afterwards, I think that would have been interesting to develop the doctor a bit more.
He was a great side character,
The doctor was great. But I would have developed him more because I think that was one of the most memorable characters. And I would have had him be like, when he was saying, oh, yeah, I could even beat you now,
right
in the arena. And maybe the main guy could be like, why do you say that? Maybe taking it a little too personally.
Right.
And
right.
The doctor would be like, because you're so angry at everything. You have no impulse control.
Yeah.
Like,
and you don't know when to stop fighting or when to strategize.
Yeah, so I think that would have been great if he helped him. It also didn't make sense that this guy who'd only been in the army and not like some big high general, unless I completely saw that.
Yeah.
Had all of these amazing strategies. Frankly, a lot of people that just go into the army to fight do not come out with great strategies because they're just told, go.
They just survive, So I thought it would have been a great arc if, for instance, the guy who was described as full of rage was full of rage and was going to get killed because of that. And then the doctor put him on opiates to control his rage, and then he had to quit opiates in order to actually win at the end. Something like there's some sort of character arc that would make sense
would
with this
really funny
super rage guy, right? Also, the other thing, too, when I was looking at the doctor, I was thinking, like, there's no way on God's green earth that absolutely everyone in Rome is that greasy. Didn't you get the sense that everybody was sprayed with a fine vegetable oil?
Maybe anyone in any medieval city in any movie ever is going to be oiled up.
I mean, you can't, because they've got fire everywhere. Everybody would flambe, like back ribs. You know, it's just like, ew, like, do they go through, you know, those mistress they have at amusement parks in Florida?
Decontamination.
Yeah, oh, decontamination, except it's a fine vegetable. Oil. It's cooking oil. Like, people cannot possibly be that greasy and be around fire.
It's set in, like, a really hot climate, so water's scarce.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's what they said. They said Rome's at the beginning when they came in. They said, oh, I didn't know the smell would be that bad.
Yeah, Rome is diseased, he says, and it was not the most subtle of analogies that they say, you know, Rome is a disease and everybody is diseased along the way, along the road to Rome. I'm like, yeah, we get it. It's a great, great analogy.
No, literally.
And also, I suppose that's just part of the whole gig, that you have to have the giant army at his beck and call and so on. So he must have been some kind of general if he had that kind of loyalty from the army. Like Maximus in the first one, by the way, was it Maximus?
Yeah.
That is a great name for a hero. You wouldn't want to be, I'm the hero, Minimus. It's like Maximus.
Anytime I hear Maximus, because the first time I encountered it was Fallout.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't. Yeah, yeah. Anytime, it's like, nah, you have a T-60 power armor, sorry.
And I remember from the very first time I saw it, Russell Crowe as Maximus, like, I'm just a slave. What possible difference can I make? You get that sense of despair and helplessness. This new guy was just like one note. You know, blank-faced, heroic, and occasional screaming. But that's the same thing that comes out of the Dune actor. Timothy Chalamet, I think his name is. There's this like modern style of acting that you don't move your face like you've been face planted with Ozempic and what's the one where they put the needles in?
Botox.
Yeah, you've been Botox into facial immobility.
I think a lot of them have been Botox.
But then what happens is you just scream once in a while and then you just go back to murmuring. So that was, he did not have the charisma to me as the same first guy to have that loyalty. Sorry, go ahead.
When I was auditioning for the play that I'm in right now, it was like an online audition because for a number of reasons. And I realized the first time I filmed myself, acting, I looked and I'm like, why is my face not moving?
Yeah.
Like, I had the voice because I've done voice acting before, so the vocals came off fine. But when I looked at my face, it was just blank.
Right.
Like, I was doing a monologue from Glass Menagerie, and I was, like, screaming about, like, what was it?
Oh, it's when he says, here's all the crazy things I'm going to do when I go out at night.
No, it was right before that. That was one I was thinking of doing, but I couldn't quite get it. And I thought, like, look, if I'm doing an audition, it needs to be the best. It was the one where he says he's ranting about how he's going to spend the rest of his life working in the shoes.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right.
Maybe like 55.
You think I'm like thrilled to go to the shoe factory every day?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's like screaming about that. And my face is like blank, like I'm ordering a coffee.
Right, right.
So I've really, really worked on getting facial expressions. And that's something that I also get in movies. It's like, why did I work to do this? If this is not the style like that people want.
I remember when I first started acting, I was never so aware of my hands. Like, what do you do with your hands? So you don't want to.
Apparently, I do too much. I've been told I have chicken wings.
Do not saw at the hands. Yeah, yeah, like you're beheading birds flying past.
Yeah, right.
So I thought it was interesting. There's two other things. I mean, I'm sure you have your own thoughts, but the first was, I thought it was interesting that the son of Maximus grew up in a completely different environment, in a completely different area, in a completely different culture, and he's exactly the same heroes. Whereas the guys who grew up in Rome are, you know, terrible. But the guy who grows up, well, he was in Africa, right?
Yeah.
He was in Africa speaking a different language, I think, in a different culture. And but he's still Maximus. And so they were basically making the argument for genetic determinism for personality and character.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guys who are the offspring, I don't think they were a direct lineage or whatever it is, but the guys who are the emperors are always the same. And the guys who are the son of the heroes are just the exact same as the heroes, no matter the fact that you raise them in a completely different culture and language and continent and climate and everything. He had no exposure to Rome, but he was perfect Roman. And I just thought that was like, okay, there's quite the argument that, well, you know, the best way to be a hero is to just have a hero as a father. Otherwise, you're doomed.
Yeah.
I just thought that was like not the most inspiring journey in the world. He's just born that way. He's just born that way.
It's like the Avengers movies where it's like, yeah, well, the only way you're going to ever do anything good in the world is if you get bitten by a radioactive spider. Other than that,
you have mixed all the genres up like I can't even believe. Radioactive spider is Peter Parker from Spider-Man. That's not Avengers.
Yap, yap.
Okay, okay, but I know what you mean. Like
superhero, superhero, yap, they're all the same thing. There's going to be some multiverse where they interact. There's like 30 movies at this point. You don't even know.
And I think, yeah, so the idea that you have to, or X-Men, you have to have these crazy powers in order to be a hero. It's just a way of saying you can't be a hero, whereas moral heroism is available to everyone. Big speech, insert big speech here. All right.
So don't that, move your face.
So, and scream! So that was the first one. The second thing that I was thinking about was there's always this fantasy, and it's the same thing with Lord of the Rings, which is, you know, there's a lot of power. The emperors have a lot of power. The senators have a lot of power. And power has corrupted them. But don't worry, man. The new guy?
No, he's not going to get corrupted.
He's going to be totally great. I mean, the thing with Tolkien was that Tolkien was actually, he wrote a letter once saying, you know, I'm technically an anarchist, but not of the bomb-throwing kind. He doesn't believe that political power serves anyone. And I wonder if he could have got the book even published. And also in the Shire, which is his paradise, there's no political power.
Oh, yeah.
And I think a mayor is mentioned once in passing, but they never do anything. So there's no political power in the Shire and everyone's happy. I wonder if he could have got his books published if Aragorn had said, no, there should be no government. And that way probably people can work things out for themselves. But he's got like the Return of the King. Well, see, we've had some really, really bad guys in power, but don't worry.
This guy's got it.
This guy totally got it. This guy,
trust us,
can totally handle power. And how do we know? Because he's butchered like 200 people over the last couple of years.
Just to get power. Because,
well, to survive, you could say, right?
I'm kidding.
Yeah, so
I would like to see a third one where this guy, Lucius, is now the bad guy.
Well, that's generally what happens.
Emperor. I like to see that.
That's generally
and
what happens.
Maybe, like, screwed up a lot of stuff. The Dream of Rome, he misunderstood, turned to communism. Like, I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, Rome was pretty communist anyway. So
I know, but it made it worse.
Or, to me, it would be interesting because you've got the lineage thing going, right? And so if Maximus had been the emperor and son of Maximus, Maximini, Mini Max, Maxisborn.
You cannot.
Stop that. Okay. So if he had been raised with all of the privileges of power because his father was an emperor, would he have turned into a terrible guy? Like the twins or the brothers. So,
yes.
Because was this guy only heroic because he was not raised with any sort of money and power? This is the thing that rich people have a big problem with, which is that they often become rich because they grew up poor, they know the value of a dollar, they become crazy hard workers. And then their kids are like, I got Instagram likes for going to Dubai. And how do you teach kids the value of money and hard work when they really don't have to? You know, I mean, that's a big problem for a lot. And so how do you teach kids to be noble and heroic and hardworking when they grow up in Rome as the son of the emperor? So it would be interesting. To me, it would be interesting to see how, even if power doesn't corrupt this guy, and it seems likely that it would, but power would corrupt his kids.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah. I was happy to see the
but
bomb back.
I think
back.
They already did that with Marcus Aurelius and Commodus. Marcus was a fine ruler, but Commodus was completely insane.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Why is it that evil is vaguely gay with eyeshadow?
Because gay is vaguely gay with eyeshadow.
I don't know. Like that seemed like everyone who was manly was super manly, and everyone who was effeminate was like maximum betrayer. And I don't know, that seemed a bit biased.
I gotta say I thought the tall emperor was a good actor.
He really, man, talk about throwing yourself into the role and holding nothing back.
He was like Ed Sheeran, if Ed Sheeran didn't look like a potato. In a nice way.
Right, right. No, I really admire that. You know, when people have crazy scenes and they're like, they just completely go into it and like they hold nothing. I was in a play like that once with an actress who had to play a crazy scene, and I was legit terrified of her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like I was like, I had to wear diapers.
That's funny.
She had a job as a psychic on a hotline. So people would call her up and she's like, yeah, I don't know anything about anything. I just tell them stuff that I thought they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was like, I mean, she just committed, man. And I
admire that. Honestly, I really respect that.
I feel a little bit self-conscious about that kind of stuff. I was once, a friend of mine was in a band and they were playing at the El Macambo, which was like a pretty good venue. And they did a song called Fairies in Boots, and they had me come out in boots and dance and jump around the stage and attempt to, chew on the neck of the guitarist and so on. Like just goofy stuff. And that was a lot of fun. But I still to throw yourself into being that vile. I mean, I thought the first guy did it as well. Commodus.
Dude, there's no way that guy was acting.
Yeah, his brother, I think, died in a drug overdose outside of a nightclub called the Viper Room, and he had a pretty rough life.
There's no way that first actor was acting. Like, there gets to a point where it's like...
He's the same guy who played Joker, which was also another vile role. He also played Napoleon, but he said to the director with Napoleon, which was not a very good movie, he said to the director, "I have no idea what's going on with this character." And the director's just, "Yeah, you're fine."
That's how I feel.
You're doing fine. What, with the dodo bird?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's not supposed to be a coherent character.
I know.
So I thought he was good. And I thought the mom was very good. She played that sort of nobility quite well. And I liked how she said, you know, basically, since Maximus has been a guy with a sword to my throat. And this sort of love of death stuff, that's quite common. There's a big clash between cultures that want to live and cultures that are happy to die. Because the cultures that are happy to die tend to win in battle.
Yeah.
They tend to not die, right? So like the Vikings, one of the things that was so terrifying about the Vikings, which we know, of course,
was war.
Yeah, from their
Valhalla, right?
Yeah, and we know this, of course, from the historical documentary about Toothless.
That is, okay.
And, okay, just give me one line. Okay, you ready? You ready?
Yeah.
I regret nothing!
I regret everything!
Beautiful. I love that contradiction between those rough and tough or whatever they were.
Yeah.
Those two actors were fantastic that show.
The characters were amazing.
Because and I thought that
iconic.
They give the same commitment even to the TV show or whatever it was, like not the series.
Yeah.
Or the dad who's like falling from the heavens and still fighting with whoever he's with. So this love of death is a real challenge, because the people who love life tend to be cautious, and the people who are like, "I can't wait to die to join my ancestors in eternal battle and beer drinking."
That needs to be my mentality at the cafe.
What? I'm happy to die in battle. Well, you know what? That's going to get you some tips.
Next coworker.
It's also going to get the police. The police are going to get some tips as well. Right.
I think every society would be improved with that mindset.
I have doubts, but okay.
I think savoring life.
Right, right. Yeah, so and of course the wealthier society gets, this is one of the theories, this is sort of the theory of Rome, right? The wealthier that a society gets, the more fearful and neurotic and safety obsessed.
They have stop having real problems.
Yes, and also it gets more feminine.
I'm gonna not do this, or I need to go work out more. It's like, do you think people cared about that when they were like starving farmers under communism? Like, people just don't have real problems anymore. That's
right.
Why medieval times, I think, look so appealing to so many people, is because it's back when you actually just had straight, like, hearty, like, are we gonna have enough food for the end of the month,
right?
Or are we gonna get invaded by X, right?
19 of my direct relatives have dropped dead from the plague. I'm gonna cross my fingers and go to church.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things like that. I think nowadays the reason why people are so neurotic and depressed is genuinely just because they don't have real problems.
Well, and also masculine influence has significantly diminished with regards to child raising.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is the bubble wrapped children, like the moms who just can't handle their children getting like falling and getting hurt. And it's they always have the worst case. Moms always have the worst case scenario going on. And that's great. When babies and toddlers are death magnets, you know, they want to fall down, eat everything, and you know, their stairs and pots of boiling water.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, I get that. I know you're kidding, but, you know, I mean, nature took care of half of babies by the age of 5 anyway.
Yeah.
So they do have the worst case scenario, and that's really good for when there's babies and toddlers. But when kids, especially boys, if you restrain them from exploring and acting out, then the boys end up kind of high strung, kind of neurotic, and kind of anxious. You know, boys need to test their limits, as do girls, right? Like, I was saying this on the show the other day about how, like, boys love to, and we used to do this too, like play fight, right?
Yeah.
And play fighting is really good because you're super aggressive and having fun with it. But every now and then someone's going to get an elbow in the eyeball, and then there's like, ow, ow, ow. It's like, oh, I went too far. So you learn how to be aggressive, but also manage your aggression. And so
people killed and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you've noticed this a tiny bit among some of the teenage boys, that they seem to be a little, I don't know, what's
feminine.
The right word? A little high strung, a little
no, feminine. Feminine. They're feminine.
Yeah, but again, for me, feminine, like I grew up with my mom was a bit, that was very much neurotic that way, but my aunts were very sort of tough and very sort of, you know, if he falls, he'll just get back up again.
Yeah, know what I mean when I say feminine.
Yeah. Like the sort of the modern neurotic stuff. So, yeah. So I think that's the idea that you get, as political power grows, you don't get as many tough guys in power. And when you don't get the tough guys in power, you end up with these, you know, this is sort of the Justin Trudeau thing versus, say, Donald Trump, right?
Yeah.
And you don't end up with the tough guys in power. And so what happens is you have this model of power equaling not sort of martial strength and moral courage that way, but just this sort of petty manipulation and language-based stuff. All right, yeah. We'll take a short break here. We'll fix it, finish up on the way back. All right, so here we are in our final bit of the movie. I must say, I know that the CGI and all of that is great. It is really amazing to me that they can just recreate Rome in that way. Because they used to do this in old movies, just like they'd have one room in Rome, you know?
Yeah.
And a painted backdrop. But they really just, you know, they have birds flying over the whole Colosseum. Like, it's pretty wild.
That final scene where he was walking through the Colosseum at night, it did look like a miniature.
Yes.
Very clearly.
Yeah.
Like, when I saw it, it wasn't like I had to think about it. It was the first input that my brain gave me was, this is mini.
Right.
But other than that, it was really good. And even then, that might have just been my brain at night. But if something just looked off about the scale.
Yeah. It is. But I wouldn't say that the first one, oh my gosh, that was so primitive and so on. And this one was just so much
better. No, they looked pretty much the same. Like, I didn't realize the CGI in the first one much.
Yeah.
I don't like to think about how it's made.
Right. No, I get that.
I like to think about how would I do it if I was making it.
Yeah.
But I hate thinking about it because it just kills the movie for me, thinking, oh, that's so much money. How did they get this? How did they do that? I'm just like, nope, it's filmed in Rome.
Yep.
This is Rome.
This is how it is, man.
It's Rome. They went to Rome and filmed it. That's what I think.
Now, what about your thoughts on the unusual nature of the lack of love interest?
Usually I like that in movies.
Yeah.
This one, I felt it would have been an improvement if it actually did have a love interest. Because usually I'm a fan, if movies don't have a love interest, it's like, that's kind of nice. It's right. A refreshing change, right?
Yeah.
This one, that's honestly the main thing I think that was lacking.
Right.
It just seemed like it would have added a bit more complexity and it would have made me root for the main guy a little more. Because like right now, if he dies, the only thing that ends is like his bloodline, which is like sad, but more in an abstract way.
Yeah.
And not a, oh, if he dies, now there's like the wife or the
girl. It's full of sorrow and right.
Yeah. So like it didn't feel like he had much to lose.
Hmm. Yeah. We also don't know exactly where he got this dream of Rome thing from.
His mother taught it to him when he was younger.
Okay. Got it. I mean, that's a lot to retain from being 5 and 10.
12.
And 12. Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, 4 years ago for me, I know. I remember a lot from when I was 12 and under.
Yeah, that's fair. So, yeah, okay.
And I think the one instruction his mom gave him was, don't forget.
Right. Okay, that's totally fair. What is there anything else that you would have changed about the movie, do you think? Maybe, say, more humor, maybe a love interest?
A lot more political plot.
No,
yeah. Humor was for the first movie.
Oh, sorry, humor. But there really was only the one baboon joke in this one, right?
Yeah, although there were some funny lines with the doctor and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. He, again, really well acted, and he had some real character to him. The problem I also have is with the gladiator, and it's a big problem that you have. I mentioned this when we were first talking about the movie, that this is famous actor Marlon Brando, who is directing a scene with a bunch of people lining up a street. And he went up and down for hours telling everybody on the street what their backstory was.
Yeah.
Like the extras.
No, I think that matters. Genuinely, I think that matters.
So I think the challenge is when you have, so how many would you guess there were of his fellow gladiators that showed up regularly? 12, 10?
Maybe 8? 10.
Maybe 10? Right. So the big challenge you have is, why do you care about the gladiators? Well, you have to give them generally positive characteristics, like they're heroic and brave and frightened and, you know, things that you could admire and empathize with and so on. But it didn't seem to me that they put any work at all into differentiating the blob of abs known as this fellow gladiators. And I think that was a shame because I think it doesn't actually take that much. So if I were the director, I would say to the actor, you know, think of the most unusual person you've ever met and act that.
Right. Yeah. To really give it character.
To really give it some sort of differentiator or some sort of character, as opposed to be grim-faced, have abs and leather.
Yeah.
And so on. Like the only thing that really differentiated them was like hair length.
Yeah, literally.
And
they're all the same height, all the same body type. And like,
and they were all oily, if you remember.
It is how it is. You don't understand it. You're not man enough.
I assume that in Rome, because, you know, most of Italian cuisine is based on olive oil. I assume they just spray it in the air so that you're continually.
That was Rome and it's just P. Diddy.
Oh, God. I think we have a title for this. Yeah. Oh, God. I'm beyond horrified. That's a whole different kind of movie. Although I bet you that stuff happened in the Roman Empire, too.
Honestly.
So, yeah, they just have this fine mist. So you're never without your olive oil. You just have to inhale it.
Yeah.
I thought it was good, the cynicism that the rulers had to the rules, you know, just the bread and circuses, right? Just give them some entertainment and you give them some free food and they're happy.
Yeah, that's very true.
They're happy as pigs in mud.
Welfare state.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was good. Yeah, I would have differentiated. It's not harmful or difficult, and it doesn't take much extra. People think that the character needs to be in dialogue, character needs to be revealed, because a lot of the gladiators, I mean, they had screams, but they had no real dialogue.
Yeah.
Other than maybe a word or two. But you can
do so much with facial expressions and body language.
And body language and facial expressions. I think it would have been really good. Now, I mean, that's sort of an interesting question to me, is how many people that you meet would you say have, and when I say strong characters, I don't mean that they're tough or anything
like
that.
No, but like unique characters.
Like, well, they're memorable, right? I think of
not
your friends.
Many.
I think of your friends, and we won't get into names and all of that, but I think of your friends, and I do think about a lot of them have some strongly differentiated characteristics.
There's like a few character traits, but yeah. They all have the same sense of humor. They all talk the same way. They all watch the same shows, and they all play the same games.
You're talking about the males?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, the women, they're all copy-paste. But
I can think of a few.
I can think of some who are extra worse, but
oh no, really?
The rest of them are very similar from what I've seen.
Have we recently done the rant on the music the boys are into?
I don't think there's much of a rant.
So give me the top three bands or styles that every single boy is into.
Rock. Well, it depends. If you're like more alternative, then it's Eminem or rock.
Yeah.
Eminem's just a genre at this point. But if you're more, like, if you're one of those popular TikTok boys with the broccoli hair, then it's 21 Pilots and JVKE, or whatever the letters are. The guy who does Golden Hour.
Sorry, is that supposed to enlighten me in some manner?
Yes, you've heard Golden Hour.
Oh, is it a different version of a Live Queen song that I like?
No.
Okay, then I'm not really sure. Yeah, I'm not really sure that
if it wasn't done at Live 8, he doesn't know it.
Oh, it hurts because it's true. So I'm thinking of some of the friends that you had when you were younger, some of the slightly volatile people we had around through accident. I can think of
But they're all the same.
Go on.
They're all volatile. And it's like they
volatile
have
in the same way.
Okay, so it's either volatile or it's like girly. And like there's not like a big differentiating character from what I've seen. Now, when it comes to guys, I think a little more, but still a lot of them can be kind of similar. I think it's usually differentiated by friend groups. So you'll get a friend group of the same personality archetype.
It's like a sorting mechanism.
Yeah, it kind of is. And I'm not trying to criticize. I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to meet a bunch of women who are like me when I meet more women who aren't at work, but
not going to happen.
I don't know. I think there's going to be, I think I'll find people like me. I don't mean like, oh, I'm so different and unique. I just haven't exactly found the female friend group that has my beliefs yet.
Hmm.
But I think I will, because
one of the first peaceful parented kids raised with a father who's omnipresent. And
I found a male friend group that has my personality type, but I just haven't found the female friend group yet. I know there are some because I've seen online a lot of anti-woke women. I just have not met them yet in person. So it's
I
a
would
work
say, I mean, I get that the sense of humor with your male friend group is the same.
Beliefs are very similar.
Beliefs are similar. What I think, though, is a little bit different is...
I think I'm more masculine than they are.
Well, no, but I don't want to think that. But I think that you have...
Bro, I had to order one of them their food because they were shy to talk to the waitress.
See, but that's just saying. That's not masculine.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
I don't know.
No. So I wouldn't want to think. So you are very direct, and I think you have a good amount, a sensible amount of moral courage. And you do stand up for yourself. You stand up for your friends if you think they've been wronged. And we've mentioned that before in working situations. So I don't view directness and moral courage as a specifically male trait. I think that's this trait of virtuous people. Because if we say, well, it's male.
But it's more male because women don't
have
that.
Not in your circle.
Okay, with the one except, but you were just saying that I'm like this massive exception. So.
Okay, stop using all of the tricks I taught you against me. That's the same as patricide.
I don't think you taught me that.
Right. No. So, I mean, the way that I view things, like moral courage is sort of necessary to love and be loved. And so if we say that women can't do it as much, and they'll do it in different circumstances. So in general, a woman's moral courage will be standing up to authority rather than, say, you know, running into a fight and rescuing the weaker person or whatever, right? That might be more of a male thing. But
yeah.
There's different aspects. You know, moms are all of 5'1" and change. I view her as very morally courageous because she will sort of stand up for the right thing and
on a stool.
I'm sorry?
On a stool.
Oh, gosh.
I say this with my very proud 2 inches on her.
Yeah. You might eke out a little more.
I think I'm growing a tiny bit. It's got to eat some protein.
Protein and, you know, reach for the chandeliers.
Calcium.
Yeah. So mom is not, she wouldn't be like, oh, there's a fight and I'm going to go in, right? But when it comes to, so the other moral stuff that she does, so I think men and women will manifest their moral courage a little differently, but I think that's the equal for both, if that makes sense, in terms of what there is to admire.
How did we get here?
So we were talking about you feeling more masculine, and I think that you have a good, now when I say you can have too much moral courage.
Oh no, we were talking about character archetypes in the movie.
We were. And so, I would say that we were talking about differentiating the gladiators. And I would say to the actress, you know, think of the most unusual person that you've met and play that person. Now, maybe that's not the right person or whatever. But, you know, to me, the problem is, too, that there was just this blob of heroic, courageous, you know, moral chat, perfect gladiators. And in every group, especially groups that don't choose to be together, right? The gladiator, like, you are going to have a sadist. You are going to have a psycho. You are going to have...
Yeah, they're not all going to be moral.
Yeah, they're not all going
to
be...
Tell you about it. I go to work. I have a workplace of 6 people and I have every single one.
Right. So it to me, it would be more interesting to not have a blob of the same guy in different forms.
Like, yeah, it would have made you feel more attached.
Right, and that they are more human.
Some more interesting dynamics for the fight. Because, like, for these fights, it's like, okay, those are some really cool setups.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask how you got sharks in there, but...
I was asking myself how we got sharks in there.
I'm not going to ask that. But I think another way to have a really interesting fight dynamic would be to have different personality types fighting. Obviously, all skilled, but as you were saying, like a sadist or a psychopath or something like that. Yes, you can have a cool arena, but I think it's the people that really make the fight come alive.
Or can't we have... And I think this is out of the life of Brian. Like, can't we have a guy who's kind of cowardly and just keeps withdrawing until the guy gets heat stroke?
That would be funny.
Like something.
Even
something
if it's
like
a reference to, like a direct reference to Monty Python.
Yeah.
That'd be really funny.
So something, like, so there's always this scene, and there was this scene in this movie too, the scene where the hero is doing his, for the dream of Rome, you know, like, we're going to fight for the, and everyone's like, who's with me? And every single person is like, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not how it is.
I'd be like, eh.
I mean,
I'm 50-50.
Yeah. I mean, now, the other thing too is that people who are brave, I mean, bravery is a complicated thing because some people who seem brave just kind of want to die.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I'm not kidding about this. Like, when you see some guy leading the charge against machine guns, it's like, okay, so this is a guy who's got a really bad conscience, is in chronic pain.
He wants to do one last good thing.
Is suicidal and just wants to go out in a blaze of glory. So in America or in other places, they call it death by cop.
Yeah.
And this is people, they reach into their pocket, they're about to pull out a weapon, the cops blow them away, and it turns out there was nothing in their pocket. And it's suicide by cop or death by cop. So these are people... They are suicidally brave, and part of it is because possibly, I mean, that they just want to die. And I've never felt that, of course, so I don't really understand the mindset, but I do get that there is that thing in life where people just want to die. So, you know, could you not have, like, when he's saying, you know, it's always hold, you know, hold and bellowing away, hold. It's like, can you not have some guy who just shrugs and like runs into a spear?
Oh, that'd be
like
funny.
He's just tired of killing people and dying, and he hates his life because, you know, the life of a gladiator would be pretty
a little stressful,
a little exhausting, a little like, what's the point? And but of course, the argument would be that the only reason they became gladiators is because some guy bought them, and therefore he's evaluated them as to their quality. Oh, wait, one other thing. That wasn't yawn, was it?
Nope.
Were you trying to inhale some olive oil?
Yeah.
I've made that vivid for everyone.
It calls
right?
for me from the Greeks.
Yes. So, okay. In the first fight with the guy who was bald, who had the absolutely unnecessary death because he was actually kind of a nice guy, and we knew that.
He was not a nice guy.
He was a really great guy. We knew that because he was bald. Yeah. So that's the character arc. The character arc is the scalp arc, except it just goes up and up.
It does go back down.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry, that was not the greatest analogy.
The scalp arc, except it's not a scalp. It's a diagonal line going up. Because bald.
Okay. Well, should we pause on the joy of that analogy for a bit? Okay, so in the very first fight he has with the bald guy has, I mean, they're like super knuckle dusters, are these things you put on your knuckle.
I'm not yawning. I'm stretching my jaw.
Okay. I think I've seen this in a documentary right before the ape falls asleep. So he's got these super metal knuckle dusters, and he punches as an experienced fighter with his full weight behind him.
Yeah, that guy's got to be like 250 of muscle.
Yeah, yeah. And you know that because he's... Okay, so...
Oh, you're 250? No, I'm kidding.
So he punches this guy full in the face with lots of muscle and experience and with these giant metal gloves on. Like, holy crap. I mean...
That would take out teeth.
That would take out teeth. That would shatter the cheekbone. An eye would squirt out, like the amount of damage that would do. And this is something that has bothered me for a long time. And I know it's got to be dramatic. But, you know, it's like, what happens? Well, he gets a tiny cool cut on his cheekbone. He gets up. He shakes his head. He spits out a little bit of blood. And he just goes back in.
Yeah, like, where's the blood even come from?
Well, don't ask, right?
No, because, like, if you didn't lose a tooth, you didn't break anything, you didn't bite your tongue. So then, like, where'd the blood come from?
I'm not, don't unpack the biting tongue thing, but I don't know.
Because, like, you get punched, and then, like, instead of clenching your jaw like a manly man, you bite your tongue because
right.
it gets in the way.
Right, okay. So I would say that the amount of damage, and I'm fine with that to some degree. Like, if the guy's got bracers and somebody hits him on the sword, like, hits the sword on the bracers, he's got some metal studs. I get that's going to be a pain that you feel later and so on. But there was at least four or five giant smashes with huge metal gloves into his face. And he's like, you know, shake it off, man. And he seems afterwards, he's just kind of fine. There's no black eyes. There's no, you know, people, we've seen videos where someone loses a tooth just by, you know, flipping off a skateboard.
Yeah.
And so the amount of damage that people take in these movies is so, it's to me, it's so unrealistic.
Like, when I was younger, remember, I was like four or something, and I accidentally bumped my face into a scooter and lost my tooth.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, that was not nearly as hard.
Oh, that was a bump.
As punching out, or sorry, as like getting punched by a spiky metal thing in the jaw.
Yes.
And also that was not like a wiggly tooth, because I was like three. I think it was three going on four.
Yeah, yeah. It was one,
like,
of your baby teeth.
That was a baby tooth that was in there. It was not ready to come out.
Yeah.
And it came out with light impact.
Yep. Well, you ended up having to have it pulled, but it was bent.
Like 90%
out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember. And let's not mention the other time I lightly fall onto the sidewalk and break my wrist.
Yeah.
Like, It was not an aggressive fall. Like, I was going like 2 miles an hour.
Yeah. And you braced yourself and you just happened it. So the amount of injury that people can receive, like, there was this guy, he shot, at least he's accused of shooting, or he's alleged to have shot the CEO of a health insurance company in the States. Now, this guy, I know this is going to sound like a tangent, but this guy was Uber Chat. Like, he had abs, good looking guy, as Italian as Enzo.
That's a reference.
And he was like, he went to a $40,000 a year private high school and was valedictorian. So he was like top, he was top
Chad,
school,
Chad.
Like, oh, super Chad, and very athletic and very, very, a great grin, very handsome, like just a super guy. Now, what happened was, at least what seems to have happened was, he was surfing in Hawaii and he had an injury. I don't know what happened other than he got injured while surfing. Injured while surfing is usually you get hit by a surfboard or you fall onto some rocks.
A shark kills you.
It was not that.
Too bad.
Because he was still alive.
Well, he's a Chad.
Right. So he got a lower back injury. Now, 40% of men have back pain. It's like a huge issue because our backs are still evolving from when we were mostly on fours.
Yeah.
So he had a back injury that absolutely destroyed his life. Because there's a whole subculture of people who, like, I got a back injury. And often you'll hear, he had seven surgeries. You know, like, they just keep them up and trying to fix it, and it doesn't quite take, and then there's a long recovery. And sometimes the back stuff gets worse because you're recovering. Anyway, it's just a whole mess. And I'm very thankful to have never had back issues.
Yeah.
Part of that is because I exercise a lot, but part of it's just good luck, right? So this guy ended up on a lot of painkillers. And then he decided to go alternative medicine.
Oh, shoot.
So he went down to Mexico on an ayahuasca journey. I don't know if you know anything about that stuff. But
I don't recognize the term.
So ayahuasca is this incredibly strong drug that people say opens you up to six-dimensional Incan turbo demons.
That sounds pretty fun.
And so
I have a new idea for a drink at the cafe.
It's my ayahuasca chala masala. So
chala masala.
So he basically opened up his entire consciousness to some theoretical alternate dimension where Giga Chad Uber demons rearrange your molecules.
Well, did they fix his back?
No, apparently not.
Aw.
So, and he just went further and further. So I assume he'd been on pain meds for a long time. He tried a lot of different drugs. He tried this incredibly disastrous ayahuasca drug. And anyway, so he ended up going full mysticism. And so, look, my point is like, so the guy fell badly on a surfboard and his entire life is destroyed. But, you know, Uber Chad Gladiator guy can take massive facial blows. No brain injuries, no hydroencephaly, no brain expansion, no losing teeth, no cheekbone chipping or breaking, no orbital socket catastrophes. He's just like, what do? You stand up, you shake your head slightly, and you spit out a little thin thread of blood. You get a cool scar.
Responds in your mouth for manliness.
Responds in your mouth. Yeah, that's right. So the amount of punishment, I'm fine with sword fights because sword fights, you block it or you don't, right? But the amount of physical bludgeoning that people take.
I think you're just not man enough to get it.
I just, you know, I don't mean to squeal, but I was just like, no way. No way. I'm not too bad with pain tolerance, but there's just, I mean, you wouldn't be able to get back up.
Yeah.
And it gives people a very unrealistic sense of being in physical fights.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I remember Marlon Brando, the actor we were talking about before, he once got so angry at being constantly photographed by the paparazzi that he punched a photographer in the mouth. Now, Marlon Brando had trained to be a boxer because he has a very famous role as a boxer. So, I mean, the guy knew what he was doing. But this was when he was kind of older. It was like 15 years after he'd finished the boxing movie. So it wasn't like he was in some big Uber shape. And so I remember reading that the photographer, he lost some teeth with the punch. And he said, I remember this really vividly. He said, I had to keep going back to the dentist because I was in chronic pain and we never got it fixed. One punch. Now, again, this could be bad luck or whatever it is, but, you know, and that was just a regular hand punch. That was it. So just the idea that you can get bludgeoned to this degree and just, you know, keep going and have no issues, I just find mental. And I think it's really unfortunate because I think people get an unrealistic sense of the amount of damage the punch can do.
Yeah, true.
So, and especially a punch with that, you know, fists of fury stuff, the chainmail.
Yeah,
fist.
I could see it if it was just a fist.
Yeah.
But come on, like the metal spikes, like guards, it's like, okay.
So I'm, you know, and Bruce Willis used to do this. He was the best being beaten up guy in cinema history, the way he was sort of, he was the guy in Die Hard.
Yeah.
And yeah, he gives the best slow decay of human pummeling that, but it's still, you know, you stagger and there's always a scene where somebody gets, you know, they get shot in the leg and they stagger for like three scenes and then they're fine. And it's like, you know, you just...
It gets worse. It gets worse.
Yeah. You might have a bit of adrenaline.
When you first get shot, from what I've heard and like read and stuff, it's like, there's going to be pain,
yeah.
But it's, you're shocked because your body is like, what is going on?
Well, your body is like, we've got to get away. And
yeah.
So you'll run. I mean, so I biked home from cracking my forearm and didn't feel the pain till an hour or two later. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, like, what am I trying to say? You get shot and your body doesn't react to it right away.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're shocked and you feel some pain because it's not going to just give you no pain.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to know it's there.
Yeah.
But assuming it's not like in your neck or something where you're about to die.
Well, yeah.
Then you'll just be able to keep going for a while. But after is when it starts really hurting. But when it hurts the worst is when it gets taken out of the wound. Obviously, this is depending on when and how it's done.
Yeah, yeah.
But in a lot of movies, it's just like someone grabs some tweezers, opens it up, yoink. That's usually how it is in movies. That would probably, right after that, would hurt the worst. Because your body is now realizing, okay, well, we're clearly out of enough danger that we can take
it
out.
And now I have to punish you for whatever you did to get me injured.
Pretty much, yeah. So because you're in enough danger now that it can... wound can be like this thing in the wound. They probably think it's like some thorn or something. I don't know, right? Can be taken out. So we're safe now. So I can make it hurt.
Yes.
So that you don't walk on it. That's when it hurts. But in movies, that's when it gets better.
Yes. And that can happen. I remember there's a very famous physicist named Richard Feynman. I read his autobiographies and he lost his wife to some terrible disease that took forever. And he didn't really feel sad until 2 years later. He's walking down the street and he looks at a store and he sees a dress. He's like, oh, my wife would really like that dress. And the guy bursts into tears and falls to the ground.
Oh,
like
wow.
It can even happen that way sometimes emotionally. But yeah, so the amount of damage, I just think it's quite unrealistic because the other thing too is then when someone gets injured, if you watch enough of these movies and someone gets injured and they're like hobbling around and you're like, oh, they must be faking it because I've seen so many guys get up and walk away from this stuff. And I don't know. It's just really...
Yeah.
It's really sad. It's really sad. And of course, we've all seen these movies where male physical pain is nothing, but female emotional pain goes on and on forever and ever. Amen. And that seems a bit unfair. All right.
No, literally, like this guy, like even in this movie, this woman like gave up her son like what, 16 years ago?
Yeah. 16? Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, yeah, right. You're right.
16 years prior. And she's still like depressed 24/7.
But this guy shakes off massive hoof heads to the face repeatedly and has no pain after.
He lost his wife. I don't think he cried except for like the very beginning and that's it.
No, but you see, if you're a hero, you don't cry. You manly scream in agony.
You're learning.
Oh, wait. Or you drool.
Blood.
No, you remember that from the first one?
Oh my God, the snot.
The snot.
That guy was like, a phenomenal actor, honestly. Okay.
He is. Actually, Yapping. That was mostly, Yapping. There should be an Oscar award and a mucus award. And
yeah, I think he gets his own personal.
Like,
I can't believe that was the take too.
If you get a bubble at least 3 feet in diameter, you just win that award.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's the bubble of manly
it's like
sorrow.
The people try and grow giant pumpkins.
Yeah.
This guy competes with himself every year.
To get the manliest snot bubble of sorrow.
Oh yeah.
Wait, you were imitating my laugh or a manly sorrow?
Your.
Okay, that's fair. All right. Well, thanks everyone. freedomain.com/donate. It's worth watching the movie. Just don't bring your tent of children into it. It's
literally not that bad. The worst is some guy gets beheaded, but he's dead instantly. It's really not that serious.
Right. Although I'm sure in the next scene, his head's back. Oh no, his head's on a chair.
Okay.
Right. All right. Thanks everyone. freedomain.com/donate. Appreciate your time today. Bye.
Bye.